Accession number 30024, reel 6.
My own personal experience with my colleagues, like at that time, we were kept active. We weren't allowed to loll around and cause trouble or anything, but in those days, yes. Oh yes, we were. And we had a very good, when we were in devices, we had a very good dance band, which were professional come amateurish sort of side of things. And we used to have a company dance in the corn market every Thursday evening, next to the Bear Hotel. If you don't work, of course, you don't have devices. And I always liked to swing. I was billeted in the Bear Hotel, but I was at the back, not the front. But we won't go into that. Next door to that is the famous corn exchange in devices, and it's still in keeping, but it's used as a sale room and all sorts of things. But in our time, it was our company mess. And on a Thursday evening, we used to have our company dance. And some of the vehicles were allowed out of camp to go up to Melksham, Chipman, and bring in RAF personnel and WAF personnel. And there's some local ATS. Now they were allowed to come in and have the evening's entertainment. And then there's no midnight frolics. You just go home and no messing. You have to go before the guard. Yes. The only time, of course, I didn't come in contact with ATS personnel until I came home. Although there were a few for about, they had nothing to do with us, you know. But of course, when I came home, they're on staff then, you see. And of course, my last unit was headquarters MOD at Liverpool, and they had a staff of ATS girls, clerical staff, maybe. And we were they were billeted in the house. And worked there, lived there, but we were then 9 to 5 at home, majority of us. And although we were still in uniform until demobilizing. Yeah. But that, I didn't come in with like ATS units at all. I think at one point, although it didn't concern me, there was they used to dish up the ration, like midday meal and evening meal. But I can't remember. I knew there was something there, but it didn't involve me. But they were domestic ATS, you know that, yes. But that's, as I say, ATS proper, I didn't know, come in contact with until I came home. And that's, of course, they were on the staff then, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm. Yes, Southend-on-Sea was an adventure. That's after I came home. That was the posting before in Liverpool. And the NCO, the warrant officer, wanted to put me on permanent staff. And I said, not likely. I said, I came home to be demobbed. But my age stopped me, you see, because I was in, I think, 25 group, and that meant my age group, anybody previous to that, were immediately demobbed when they came home. I was held back for another 12 months because of age group, you see, and the way they were letting people through on demob. I don't know if there's any more after me, I suppose there were, I don't know. But I ended up down at Southend-on-Sea, and as I said, the warrant officer wanted to make me put on permanent staff. I said, no. They said, I'm waiting for a demob job for demob. Like, I mean, I've done, I'm entitled to it, that sort of stuff. Anyway, that was that. And then they had because it's a holding battalion of 2,000 men, they were always on the move, they had to keep them, you know, they had all sorts to keep them occupied and one thing and another. And the Army Educational Corps then, at the time, I don't know what's happened to that, is that still in keeping? No, I don't know. Well, the Army Educational Corps, they had an idea of creating the Army Educational Scheme for the battalion. And they went round and round. And yours truly ended up, don't laugh, as assistant maths instructor. But I had to work harder than the chaps I was supposed to talk to about, because I mean my maths had gone haywire. I mean, a long time since I'd been to school. Anyway, I used to swat up just before a short time of talking, half an hour or so, blackboard, you know, A plus B minus B. Anyway, there were two. I do remember the two students, and whether they would be eventually going away to university, or they were university students at the time, but the poor things, they'd never been overseas, they'd never seen, like, it's all Indian. And, well, of course, they, behind the scenes, they'd have left me standing. But of course, because they were as they were, the old timers, those kids, their kids, not going to tell us what to say. But I got away with it, you see, being one of them. And then, of course, on the other hand, on top of that, there's all sorts of schemes. And we also had a forum, every so often, in the evening. And there'd be sitting ducks like me, myself, and a few others on the platform as the fight. I'd do anything to keep them occupied, you know, sort of. Because, I mean, you couldn't let them loose through the whole of South End, you know. And as in that particular time, I don't know any trouble, really. The behaviour was quite well, but about 2,000 troops wouldn't be like that now. You get some rough stuff somewhere, yeah. No, I said, oh yes, I... Anyway, eventually I did get my posting up to Liverpool, and the vehicles were out at Highton Camp, and we could requisition buses, taxis, any trooper that came into Liverpool, landing, and things like that, you see. Then I eventually demobbed, and then I was on pay, I was on army pay for the next 6 months after that, because they owed me all that time overseas. So that was it. And that was the end of June 46 when that stopped. Yeah.
What was, in the period between returning from France and leaving for Africa, what was the general morale like in the country?
Oh, we settled down quite well. And then, of course, you see, we were kept busy because for a time we were under strength. And in Ewhurst we were, because we were getting new men. Our vehicles were with us, but we needed more personnel. And we used to have, because we were in a large house that had belonged to Rear Admiral Cantley. And as far as I know, he had something to do with the sinking of the Royal Oak in Scapa Flow, the beginning of the war. And my section, petrol section, B section, was billeted in that house. And all the oak panelling had been hard boarded up, you know, for especially the staircase. And we had the office there, well, a couple of offices there, as well as our billet, you see. But our vehicles were half a mile away or more, down a blank. I don't know whether it went to another big house or whether it went into a farm. We never knew after that. It didn't concern us, really. But it was a dead end from what it was. But it was quite wooded on the way. And we'd cut bays into the wooded area and put a bit of hardcore down. And our vehicles used to reverse into them We had the natural camouflage of the forest, the trees, the woods, like. And that's how my vehicles, I used to have to go down and check my vehicles before they went out on detail. And sometimes I had to hoof it, sometimes I used to pinch a motorcycle. do my sort of physical bit with the vehicles and then come back and the office was there for detail and all that sort of. But we used to have had to have a guard on the house as well as the vehicles. And of course one couldn't do the other. So that meant we had the number of people we had, we had to have two stags a week instead of one. Put it that way, put it in vernacular. So that meant that the NCOs were kept with their heads down, as well as the men, you see, in a way. And that was the way we were for quite a time in Newhurst. It wasn't so bad. It was a different situation at Devizes because the vehicles were well out the way in a park, an actual park, away from the centre of the town where we were based, like the section was. So we had to have a little march, and it was really a miniature Buckingham Palace every night, because outside their hotel, which was akin to the Corn Exchange, you see, that was where the guard mounted. And of course, we had to mount the guard, fixed bayonets and all that, and march off, you see, where we'd have a little audience, you see, watching the evening guard move off. Yeah. There's nobody watching us come back in the morning. But that was a different situation. But in Newhurst, we were pushed a bit. There we had an air raid. This is only because I can recite it, but it should be indeed like some sort of information, because while we were there, a German bomber wouldn't go through the London barrage, and he just let his load go, and Newhurst got the lot. And as far as I know, there were at least two HE bombs that took the front of our billet out and took the water main up and the gas main up and blocked the main road, main road is the glorified lane, blocked that up. Because Harry Drewitt and myself, who I worked with, we were at the little hut further up the end of Newhurst, where they had you could get a cup of tea and things like that in the evening, because the other side of the road was a WVS, which you could get refreshments as well in the evening. But we thought, oh my God, Father, you see, because the whole place shook. And when we went out, everything was alight within centuries. And we said, hey, blame me, we've got to get back to the billet, you know. We got as near the billet when this huge crater. And, oh, blimey, days, how did we get in, you see, because our gateway had gone. And that was a great big gateway with these huge walls on the top of the balustrade. And you should have seen what they were anchored on, huge blocks of concrete, you know, below the... Anyway, we managed to get back, and we helped the guard on duty and the corporal of the guard at the time out of the crater. They were both alive. The Vic, I can't think of his name, second name, but Vic the guard, he was really traumatised. I don't know what happened. I can't remember what happened to him eventually. But the corporal of the guard, who eventually became a sergeant, and he died as soon as we were... He couldn't take captivity. We weren't captured very long, and he died. Hadley Loads. And anyway, all he had was a very unusual fracture. It was a fractured scapula, which was a shoulder blade. Mm. Anyway, whether that had an effect eventually, he didn't suffer from captivity. He died very quickly. I don't know. We don't know why. You know, it was a mystery to us. But Vic, the guard, of course, you see, eventually we all separated in lots of instances, and we don't know what happened to the old gang, if you know what I mean. We come in contact with the new sort of, That was the US. Well, the incendiaries apparently didn't do any damage at all. Everyone fell safely in somewhere, in somebody's garden or back garden or something. And there was only one thing that we knew about, was one particular chappie, the incendiary didn't ignite. And what this black oily stuff that was inside spoiled all his cabbages in the back garden. He had a row of cabbages or something, and they were ruined because of this. It was only because it didn't ignite like the others, you see. But of course, the lads, they were just enjoying them, kicking dirt on them for the mouth, you see. But an extra guard as well on the road then, just in case a vehicle came, in case of it, everybody would have a WD one. Anyway, 4 o'clock, I think, I remember I'm right, about 4 o'clock, there was this thump. And apparently it was a delayed action. Well, you see, that was, this was what, about coming up to 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. And then this was 4 o'clock the following morning. And it was across the way from our billet on a great big pasture, which was fortunate because had it been like the roadway, it'd have been more damage would have been done. But it fell on this pasture, and it was just soft loam earth, and all it did was make a huge crater and turf this soft earth over. That was that, 4 o'clock. I went on for 6 o'clock. And I had no sooner just sort of taken over. And I went across to where the rubble, well, like the earth was, looking across. And two wardens came in, a chief bloke with a white helmet and an ordinary bloke with a black helmet. And they were walking over along a footpath across the field, looking at the crater itself, you see. They were coming across where they knew, they were locals, they knew it. And I was by the edge of the field and the roadway. There's a bit of a stile. And I said, oh, well, I never pass your remarks, you see. They no sooner got to the stile with me than there was another. And the second delayed action went off. And that was in line with the first one. The three of us thought we'd sort of ducked like. But we picked ourselves up the other side of the road. The blast had taken us across the road. It was only afterwards we realised what really had happened. And by golly, you know. And it was only because it was the soft earth that showed great big chunks in it and left a crater, of course. That otherwise, it had it been macadam or something like that, it would have caused a lot more damage. And that was the U.S. episode of the bombs being jettisoned.
How far were you from the second explosion?
Ooh. Not a terrible. It was fortunate for us that it was soft loam earth, as I said. If it had been like anything like the billet, the high explosive on the road, we wouldn't have been here, I don't suppose. I would give roughly from here to Station Road. Now there's another block on the end of this up to the road. That's the car park we came down, then the sloping roadway. If you look through that window, you most probably, where that, can you see a house? A building?
100 yards or something, did you say?
What about that? Oh yes, enough to blow us. We didn't know it was dry. Well, we didn't know it was like blast. It was only because I think we went where we were. We thought we ducked. You see, over the other side of the road. Yes. And what the devil? You know, bewildered, really, yes, for a minute. You know. Yes. But I mean, nowadays, like if it had happened to me now, I would doubt whether I'd have had a heart attack or something or other. But being young and, you know, active, it doesn't have quite the same effect, I don't think. Well, not with me. But then I always put myself down as a slow learner, actually. Oh, dear.
What was the fear as to the likelihood of a German invasion at that period?
Well, it was, we liked it, you know. Well, it's only later. No. Later on, lots of us didn't know about the American, all the Americans that died down on the Dorset coast when they had a practice and they lost a lot of men. We didn't know anything about that until afterwards.
The one before D-Day, you mean?
Yeah. We didn't know anything about that. Well, of course, you must have. Oh no. You're getting me into a fix now. When I say I didn't know anything about that, of course I didn't know. I wasn't here.
But during the 40-41 period, was there much real concern that Germany would invade Britain?
I don't think so. Well, of course, being in the forces is one thing, being a civilian. I know my wife's a little bit anxious and her, like the family. But they... typical, I suppose, I must say it, typical British attitude, a bit laid back, you know, ready to sort of have a go sort of style attitude, you know. They weren't as, I suppose some people were perhaps of nervous disposition, but say France was a different story, but I mean, I don't think we have that French panicky. I've got to say, it's a different attitude altogether.
Do you think, though, that the country would have been in a position to repel an invasion if had it come?
Ah, now that's a different story. That is a different story. I don't know what... I only know about Dad's army and one thing and another. And barrage balloons. But I do know we were... When I was in Surrey... the Battle of Britain was coming up, and in Surrey, we've watched. Yes, we've seen a damn fight. We were down. I think we're going about our ordinary business, but because of the situation of the area, sky area, and we saw these like Spitfires and Hurricanes all buzzing around and all like that. Sorry, mostly those we couldn't. I mean, be honest, up there we saw the vapor trails and all the lovely designs they were making. And like these little planes buzzing around like flies, you couldn't tell which were Germany or ours. Like, but it was just interesting, you know. But now and then you'd hear the crackle go, and then of course it's all dispensed and finished over. That was one instance. But another thing, we did see the bombing in Germany and how the daylight bombers came, and of course we bombed at night, Yanks at day, and the blanket bombing. And I mentioned Pirna. We saw Pirna getting bombed. And that's the mystery of where I came from to be there, because it's quite a distance in the by map, and it's got me foxed. I've been trying to work out how I ended up from there to there, and ended up in Liebstadt, you see. So it was definitely Liebstadt, I was there. And that was that. But at one time, we would have taken off our work, and we lay away from our work in the fields, the lovely summer weather, on our backs, you know, watching. And we lost count of the hundreds of little glints of the wings of the bombers. This continuous drone, And then when they were over the target, you saw this black cloud, just only for the briefest moment, leave what the glint was, or sometimes you couldn't see the glint, but you'd see that little, just for a brief moment, that little black cloud flying down. And of course, then the next minute, rumble of explosions. Yes, blanket bombing. God, it must have been terrible. And more than once we tried to count, but there were too many. And they were so high at that particular time, we could only count the little glints of sunlight on the wings when it shone. But there must have been hundreds more than we counted, yes. That was quite an experience.
How did your guards react to seeing the planes fly over?
Oh, they had to stay put. They used to look at one another, you know, where you grow, you know. But I mean, they had to herd us out of the way, see that we didn't take a walk, and that was all. I mean, they had to sort of get to it and accept it, like we had to, like anybody here when there was an air raid on. You know, I mean, the police or anybody like that, they had to sort of, you know, carry on. And act like it's all according to the individual, like that. The only thing is, our Wehrmacht guards were subservient to the SS guards. They were still only Gefreiter, same rank as such, but a wartime guard, Wehrmacht, or the ordinary Wehrmacht, he was scared stiff of the SS. And when the Jewish, now we're jumping, and this is more my, I thought it would have been more interesting, like for record. Lehrbau was where my first German job, because we didn't work in Italy, and my first German job was in a beet sugar factory at the season, and there was a contingent of us that worked in there. I was in the second filter room, which was filtering the beet juices, in the last line of beet juices before they went into the retort and then up to provide for crystallization into the centrifuges. And that was shift work. That was 8 hours morning, 8 hours afternoon, 8 hours overnight. And there was another old man in charge with me, Bruno Galt. He was 64 and was conscripted and brought up for war work. And he was crippled. He'd had an accident and he had a very bad limb. And at 64 he was conscripted for war work, poor chap. He's such a nice man. You could call Hitler all you liked, but don't say anything against his Kaiser. And he had a photograph that he showed me, and of the First World War type of German people, with the helmets with the spike on. He said, "Don't let us meet like that." Anyway, Bruno, we got on well together. Well, I did help him a lot, actually. And that was the beet sugar factory, the Lehrbau. And then I know we went by... Go by bus. We must have gone by train down to Zittau, which is a proper little town, and right in the corner against Chico Edge. And from there we went to I'm pretty sure it was a narrow gauge railway to Kleinschenau. Now there's Groschenau, which is marked on the map near Zittau. Well, where we were about, from here to Westbury, 4 miles away. It's Kleinschenau from Zittau. And the Groschenau and the other side there, and I'm pretty sure it was a narrow gauge railway, because they used to bring huge boulders and then smaller boulders and then gravel for road making, because we had to unload the thing. Then they used to bring in covered wagons full of cement, which we had to offload. And that was my first job there of concreting gang. But, sorry.